financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum, and we have a special guest today.
Her name is Jocelyn King, and she's from Smarter Online Safety. And you know I love these acronyms, SOS. Come on. All right, Jocelyn, welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much, Frances and Jess, for having me. Hello, everybody. Wonderful to be here with you.
Well, it's our pleasure. You know, online safety, oh my gosh, do we talk about it. We get calls from clients who say they think their security has been breached, they've lost money, they've been duped. And, you know, we tell them things like put a freeze on your credit report, but there's so much more to it than this. And so you make the perfect guest to talk about this. Can we start by just giving our listeners a little background on how you got into this?
Well, I was making a living and making a life. I was working in Silicon Valley. It was kind of like my dream to. I was a marketing person who wanted to get into Silicon Valley. I'm a bit of a geek and interested in how things work, and went there and started working. I spent a decade working at startups and a decade working at large companies like Intel. But I was just, you know, minding my own business, living my life, and I got targeted by cyber criminals. Not because of my work or anything, but just because it is a numbers game. And I hate to tell you, but a certain percentage of your listeners are going to have something happen in the next month and something happen in 2025. And my number was up. And when I got targeted by them, there's two different types of cybercrime. One is, you know, a phishing attempt and people get in and drain your bank account or credit card or something, and they're gone. And the other is like a long haul. And there's a lot of people who go through this where you lose a large amount of money. They come, they get into your system. They want the crown jewels and you don't even know they're coming at you right away. They get in, they hack into your network. So imagine coming home, you know, and you've had your home burglarized and, you know, you're drawers are out, things are disheveled, the door's been broken, you call the police, you know you've been, you've been burglarized. The other kind is where people get in and leave no trace. And actually that happened to me too. They actually were able to spoof being a family member, and they were able to bypass our security systems. So for instance, you know, yep. I woke up one morning and found out that our deadbolts to our house and our second building, which was my office, the deadbolts had opened at midnight.
Oh my gosh.
Sleeping. And that was a test. And the only reason I saw it was because on my phone, it, you know, there's a little history, you know, what doors are open. In fact, I was doing it to just see which doors were unlocked. And I happened to see that. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense. And it said it was a family member. And bottom line is we were able to prove to the security company, who assumed that it was just somebody sleepwalking, that or not remembering or being drunk or something. So it was when you call for help, you're also being questioned. That we had a monitor in the hallway that detected movement, and nobody had gotten up in the middle. Mm. So that was our proof that no, somebody's gotten in.
Right.
And the problem with this is that you're calling, you know, it's like calling a software company and they tell you it's a hardware problem. Calling a hardware company, they tell you it's a software problem. Everybody was saying, well, you need to call the security company. Security company says you need to call your phone manufacturer. They're saying you need to call this. So I was getting that runaround and being questioned I don't know what I'm talking about. What happened to me then was that we had been hacked. Our network had been hacked. We had people in our house, unbeknownst to us. They've actually planted surveillance. We had audio surveillance planted in our home. A microphone in our ceiling was found a year later. But in the meantime, people were listening to our conversations. They knew where we were going. They knew financial things we were doing.
Isn't that just called Siri these days?
Well, yes, but it's somebody having a direct It's somebody's private Siri that I have not authorized. You know, if I choose to put my phone in the other room,
that's right.
I at least have some control. But when you are victimized, it's when things are being done against your will and without your knowing.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here.
And
I ended up losing over $500,000.
Wow.
I ended up missing a promotion because things were so, we ended up getting a double security system and I was having to monitor all these things and I was distracted. Yep.
That's your focus. Sure.
I was living on adrenaline and cortisol drip for, over 18 months. And then it took a toll on my husband's health, my health. My husband had a series of mild heart attacks, led to him needing full surgery, almost dying. He had a personality change as a result of the surgery. And then, ultimately led to our marriage failing. Wow. So lost, job opportunities, lost $500,000, lost my marriage, and then my own health went down. If you see pictures of me from 7 years ago, when all this was happening, I look 20 years older. I show that picture and people think is that your mother? No, that's me 7 years ago.
Wow.
That's how much the stress takes a toll on you. And there was one morning I woke up where I thought, it just seems like it's getting worse every day, no matter how hard I'm trying. And I was almost like, I just thought I'm never going to recover. And at that moment though, I thought of my daughter and my niece and their kids and ultimately their kids. And I thought, I can't throw in the towel on this. I have got to find a way. I just held on to the hope that there's obviously people that know how to protect from this. I've got to make it my mission to find them and get people who would help. And so it became more palatable for me to just hear no. And are you sure that's what really happened, ma'am? And all, I just thought, okay,
so bad.
I'm gonna put you in the, you're not there to help me box, and I'm going to move on and find people.
Yeah.
And in the course of that, I found some of the smartest cybersecurity people on the planet. The people who broke into the Pentagon when they were teenagers and were told you can come work for the government or you can go to prison. And they decided to protect our nuclear submarine codes for the ones who protect trillions of dollars on Wall Street, the ones who protect large, Fortune 100s, and the ones who, in fact, some of my partners, they're the ones that are hired by Fortune 100 companies who say, come at us like you're China or Russia.
That's right. Yep.
And then they come in a few weeks later dangling the IP that nobody's supposed to be able to get so that they can tell them how to protect it. So I got to meet all these people, work side by side, founded a company. I was invited to join a company that we co-founded. And it was named a top 10 cybersecurity company. I was named top 10 woman in cybersecurity, which was huge for me because I realized it is possible. You can go from cybercrime victim, losing $500,000 and feeling your life is over to being named a top 10 woman in cybersecurity and getting to help people.
Yes. So
I wouldn't change this happening because of what I'm getting to do now. And that's what I'm doing with Smarter Online Safety.
You know, it's when we were off the air, Jess, Jocelyn and I were discovering how much we had in common. And one of the things is that kind of story. As you know, I started this business because of my personal experience, right? So I don't think there's any replacement for that. Somebody who has been through it, who didn't just develop something because they thought they'd make a lot of money on it. Necessity was the mother of invention, and she's come at this from this standpoint. It's just amazing. The thing is, it's such a violation. You just feel so, helpless and violated. Imagine a camera in your ceiling a year later. I mean, at that point, you have to just wonder, did they find everything? Is there still stuff here? What else can I do, right? And so I can understand where you were feeling like, look, the help I'm getting is inadequate, and I need to build a better mousetrap. And so I really do want to talk to you about that. I will share that I had some, not the loss of $500,000, but I had some similar experiences personally. For any of our viewers, you've heard about, I don't know if I ever told you about the time somebody broke into the home and I was home, got past my security system, all of that. But that happened to me too. And I once had my wallet stolen in North Carolina, right off my body. And I was paying a company to protect my identity. And that was quite an experience, like Jocelyn's. And I'm sure you have things to say about this. It was a very well-known company named LifeLock. I have no problem saying this because it was the truth and it's documented. And I had been paying them $19.99 a month for a long time to protect my identity. So when my wallet was stolen, I called them immediately. My wallet's been stolen. Okay. Well, the first thing is, like Jocelyn was saying, even if you're burglarized, you know you've been burglarized, but try and list everything that was missing. When your wallet is stolen, you say, what was in it? I don't know. I mean, there were all these things and maybe more. So LifeLock said to me, let us patch you over to our wallet recovery department. And this is when I started to learn a little bit about just the tip of the iceberg about what Jocelyn is having to bump up against as a challenge. That turned out to be another company. LifeLock was just like, hey, we'll take your money. We'll put fraud alerts on your credit reports, which we can do for free. And if you have a problem, we'll farm it out to another company. Well, I got in touch with the other company, and that's when I started to learn, hey, this is kind of the way it works. Now, I will say the outcome was fabulous. I was driving home from North Carolina. I was about 2.5 hours into the drive. I got a call from the state police. Can you come back? We have your wallet. And
Oh, wow.
they had my wallet, except for my license. And when they busted the people, they said, where's the license? And the people said, back at our apartment. They got a warrant. They went back to the apartment and busted them for a bunch of drugs. So they wanted to meet me and say, if you didn't have this protection, we wouldn't have this bust. Meanwhile, I had to do all my cards over, my checkbook, everything. I got home by having a check that a local restaurateur, agreed to cash for me so I could get gas money to get home. So, we have a couple of minutes before break, Jocelyn, but I wonder if you can shed some light on that. Why was I paying a company to protect my identity, and really all they were going to do was track down my wallet, and they weren't even doing that part?
Well, and LifeLock is one of many, and it's not that there's something, quote, wrong with what they're doing, but our expectation. So here's the difference. It's kind of like if you hired, when you hire these security companies that put little latches on your windows, and maybe you have a security code pass for your door, and you put a sign out in your yard that this home's protected by, and maybe they drive through once a month, okay? But there's a big, or but a lot of this is through online monitoring. There's a big difference between hiring a company that does online monitoring of your home and having a personal bodyguard. Ask Kim Kardashian or any celebrity. And the difference is we think we're getting a bodyguard. We think that if something happens, there's going to be somebody there with us helping to solve it. And it's, for instance, I went to the FBI and the sheriff, and I filled out the reports, but nothing came of it, and I didn't even get a call back. And I don't fault our frontline cybersecurity men and women, first responders. But that's when I learned I'm one in a million people filing with the FBI a cybercrime report. One in a million, 365 days in the year. If your criminals aren't a threat to national security, or banking fraud or something bigger, you're lucky to have FaceTime with somebody to fill out a report. And the disappointment of that feels like it's kind of what rape victims go through when they're thinking, do I really want to go through the process of what I have to go through? So you're expecting help, and you get more demoralized because you realize you're just filling out forms, and you're basically doing that. Some people are able, banks will cover certain losses, but by the way, they will not cover losses if you're knowingly clicking on a fraud thing or Zelling or wiring money to somebody for get rich quick scheme. A lot of people think they're covered no matter what, and that is not true.
You're buying gift cards and giving them the pins.
You're not re reimbursed for any of that. And some stuff, if it's taken offshore, the banks can't help you with, and stuff. So I'm with you. So the companies are there. What they're basically doing is monitoring the dark web, seeing that things are there. They're doing things that are, I call it hygiene. They're helping you about credit freezes and things like that. But you can do all that stuff at low cost and shore yourself up, and then put money into things that are higher level. I think what's important is if people have no protection, you got to get started somewhere. So having that, but you don't want to just do, 101. You
Just
want to do
that.
102 and 201 a little bit, especially right now, because I am still very connected to all the cybercrime people in government and corporate. And AI is a wonderful tool that is helping cybersecurity companies get smarter tools, but it is also a tool that every hacker and cyber
That's right.
is getting his or her hands on. And I say her because one third of all hackers are women.
Well, we're not quite equal yet, but you know, we're hoping for more hackers there, Jocelyn. more women hackers, please.
Right. Only 20% of cybersecurity professionals are women. So I like to say that the hackers are better at recruiting for diversity than the rest of the corporate is. So we got to up our game there. But hackers are getting their hands on it. And the thing is, you know, for $50, you can get malware and a mentor and turn it into a lucrative monthly cyber criminal business. And that's what a lot of people are doing. And the reason a lot of women are in it too is there's a lot of single moms in the world, in every country under the sun, who want to put food in their baby's mouths. And this is a way to do it. So it's not going away anytime soon.
Well, neither are we, actually. No. Jess is going to bring us to break. And when we come back, we want to hear some more about the nuts and bolts of this.
Got it.
Let's get your phone number, Frances.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with more Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, who has a great guest today.
Jocelyn King, and she's here because she's an expert in this. And we were talking about how what her history is and how she started this out of her own experience. So $500,000 loss from cyber criminals. She knows of what she speaks.
Yeah, it was such an interesting story. Did they catch them? Did they find out who did this to you? Were there any repercussions?
The short answer is no. Did find out who it was, but there was no smoking gun in that. So for instance, when the Attic Pros people came to do some work in our attic and replace insulation, that's when the microphone popped down from the ceiling. But there's no, it's not like they're dusting for fingerprints and stuff. So what they knew was that, you know, is that somebody had to be within X amount of yards in order to use it and do recording and then listen to me. So we knew what had happened, how it had happened. We did piece together who it probably was, but there wasn't.
That's so frustrating.
So no, they got away with it. Mm-hmm. And in the course of it, we just had to, you know, secure, we had to secure our perimeter basically and make our lives safer.
You know, awful. where we have so many criminals of all kinds, I think that you losing money is at the bottom of the list. I had a fraud problem at one point. I went to our local police department. They're great. They respond to things very quickly. They would not even fill out the report. I said, don't you have to do a report if I'm asking? Look, you know, we could do the report, but nothing's going to happen. We don't have the resources to follow up on this. And even if we caught them, nothing's going to happen to them. So it's like this huge advertisement that it's okay to go try to do cybercrime and rip people off. We never tell people the problem here, Jocelyn, without giving them some solutions. So, and that's what we're about is education. So let's talk a little bit about some of these things. I know we don't have terribly long left, but tell me about social security numbers. People are always saying, well, I don't want to give out my social security number. And I'm always saying, look, the horse has left the corral. It's been out there. It used to be on your driver's license. Right. What do you do about your social security number?
Yeah, so great. And that's the first thing I tell people. In fact, one of the things is one of the videos I did was stop trying to protect your social security number. Now, I don't mean you should put it on your background photo on your Facebook, but I do mean that you should assume that it's already been sold 1,000 times on the dark web. What you need to focus on is protect yourself from it being used against you. The same is true with mother's maiden name, pets' names, things like, and passwords and things like this. So the first thing is, if hackers can, if they can impersonate you through your credentials, then what do you do? Well, you need to have secure passwords on your accounts. And I will tell people, a lot of people struggle with I have yet to meet anybody who doesn't know that they need a unique, long, strong password for everything. But it's the actual implementation where people go, but they don't know how to do it. So here's a great tip for you. I highly recommend this is where you should invest a little money. It's $30 to $70 a year, depending on which one. You want to get one password or LastPass. You want to get a password
That's
manager.
That's what I use.
And the
reason. And what does that do?
LastPass.
So LastPass, especially if you're a small business owner or work in a corporation, because you can give out credentials without sharing passwords. So
that's right.
Giving each person a unique password in. So if somebody leaves, you can turn one off without having to reset everything. So LastPass is particularly geared. This is roughly right. You could use LastPass for personal or 1Password for small business. But generally, if you're a business and doing it that way, do LastPass. If you're a family or an individual, 1Password, super simple. What it does is you go in, and here's the other thing. People don't want to get started because they're going, oh, I have so many passwords. Well, if they hack into your AAA account, they might get a free tow. But if they hack into your IRA, that's another story. So write down right now, today, the 10 to 12 most important accounts that would devastate, that would really devastate your day, your year, or your life if people got in and drained it. And then you want to do that. So if you get 1Password, what you do, let's say it's Bank of America, you're going to type in, you're going to type in your email account. You're going to put in the URL link, you're going to put www.bofa.com, and you're going to have it auto-generate a unique password. It's going to give you something that's like 17 random letters, or you can have memorable, which has words like, you know, reignite, help, you know.
But they're not related.
So they're not related, and they're all separate. Yeah. Then this is the thing. You're going to save time. Believe it or not. Most people think it's going to cost them time. When you go, you don't go to bofa.com, you go into your password manager, which you get into very quickly.
Yep.
And then you say open and fill. It goes
like the launch button. Yeah. Yeah.
It populates your password and your email, and you're in. Guess what? You're now no longer going, forgot my password, reset, everything. That's where most people spend the bulk of their time, and you won't be doing that anymore.
I have to say there was a slight learning curve to it, and I really do mean slight. I mean, I had it up and running in almost no time, and I can share accounts with my assistant and my other people without giving up my password, right? So I don't have to worry if I fired somebody or something happened. I just unshare that. And you can either go in and say launch, and it goes to the website and launches it, or if you go to the website, it will there'll be a little icon next to your username and password where you can grab that from your LastPass or 1Password or whatever. It is.
The other reason that's really important is because for some people, 90% of what they do is not actually on their computer, it's on their phone.
Right.
Because there's an app, you can just copy the password and put it in while you're mobile.
That's right.
And for example, these item two, so item one is get your passwords fixed and do that.
Yes.
Item two would be turn on two-factor authentication. A lot of your banks and credit unions are requiring that.
Yep.
But there's a lot of accounts that are optional, and that's where you get the alert on your phone and you say, yes, it's me. You want to turn that on, again, particularly on your most important. If you only focus on your primary dozen, you're going to be so much safer. You can also store images of your passport. You store images of your, you do not want to keep pictures of your passport and your driver's license in your photos. So it becomes your vault.
Okay? Yes. Really, in fact, important. They call it a vault.
They call it a vault.
They call it the vault,
And a lot of people ask me, they say, well, isn't that dangerous? Because if they get in, they can do that. Okay, so here's the thing. Every 3 months, you're going to change your 1Password to that.
Yep.
And you're not going to give it out. But here's the other thing. Until you're at the level of cybersecurity protection, until you're a white hat hacker yourself, and like the people that I work with that I told you about, until you're at that level where you can do a better job of protecting yourself, then don't give up on having a tool like this do all the work for you and protect you better than you're protected today.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. What about fingerprints, retina scans, things like that? Why aren't we using that everywhere?
And it's coming. So 10 years from now, we're going to have a lot more of it. People didn't think we'd have fingerprint on our laptops and or recognition, facial recognition on our phones. And we do. So every 5 to 10 years, things change dramatically.
I knew that we would run out of time. We're not out of time yet, but we're close. I knew that we would run out of time because there's so much to talk about. So I first want to ask you if you'll come back and do another show with us and we can continue to talk about this stuff.
Oh, I'd be delighted. Yes.
Okay, good. But let me ask you, because I have this list of questions, but you mentioned the dark web.
Yes.
Explain if you can, in a couple of minutes, the dark web, what it is, and how somebody would know if their information is being used there.
Okay, so the dark web is basically, first of all, it was built by the military for private communications back in the day. And as with all good tools, the unintended consequences were it became a place where criminals can go to share information because it's so highly encrypted that you can't trace something. Mm-hmm. So so the dark web, literally, and I even do that. I have some pictures of things that I share. If you come to my website and you want to see it, so you don't go on it by yourself, okay? But you can. It's literally like the eBay and Craigslist for criminals. And I I've been on there and you see things like they're selling, you know, the passwords and this from the such and so breed. You've got a login and some piece of information about you for sale on there. Over 300 million Americans' social security numbers are on there, and there's only 332 million Americans. So the odds of yours not being on there is very slim. So they're selling things the way you would sell anything else. In fact, I saw one, there was one hacker who, I kid you not, was selling furniture and, and some jewelry and, you know, some passwords and email addresses. And so those are replicated over and over. And that's why when you get these alerts that say you've been in a breach, if you sign up for 1Password or LastPass, you'll also get alerts that, oh, this was breached and you should, you know, and then it prompts you to change it and then it helps you change it.
Right.
But it does alert you to a breach.
Once the info's up there, though, is there any way to get it down or no?
Getting it down is like, picture a Word document that went out on email to a large group list, and you go and you delete it off of one computer and then another, but then it's replicating out there in cyberspace. So it's kind of a game of whack-a-mole. That's why I say, the door's already closed on that one. Protect yourself from it being used against you, which actually makes you stronger than trying to hold on to information. Protect yourself from it being used against you is a much stronger position.
So what's the number one thing you could tell somebody they can do today to protect themselves? They're listening to the show and they say, I want to protect myself. Where do I start?
Okay. So passwords, password manager, top 10, number, two-factor or multi-factor authentication. Third, freeze your credit.
Yeah.
Freeze your credit. Probably half your listeners have and the other half don't know what I'm talking about. But the big three, you want to freeze your credit report. This means that people cannot be taking out loans, buying cars in your name and all of that. And you're finding out about it 6 months or a year later.
We talk about that all the time. And I tell people go to annualcreditreport.com or dial up the number for Equifax, punch some numbers in. Tell them you want to freeze on your credit report. They will report it to the other two credit reporting agencies. The recording will tell you what to do. I would not live a day without a freeze on my credit report.
What a great conversation. Definitely have to come back. Jocelyn, can we get your information, though, if anybody has any immediate questions?
Absolutely. So smarteronlinesafety.com. It's full of resources. I'm on a mission to help 100 million people live safer, better lives. So, and I want to help everybody who's listening take at least one step today to have a safer year and a safer life. So please take some of these tips. And if you want more, I have a weekly tip that goes out. So smarteronlinesafety.com. I'd love to help you out.
Perfect. Frances, can we get your phone number as well?
Sure, Jess. It's 413-773-3333.
All right. Thank you both so much. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram on WHMP.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Good morning.
Oh, my goodness. You're not feeling well. Hi.
It's the pleasure of having kids. You get whatever they get, you know?
Oh, you know, I don't mean to make fun of this because it's terrible that you're not feeling well, but it's interesting that at least on my side, your image blurs from time to time, which
Oh.
is probably a little bit like how you're feeling.
Yeah, probably. I'm fading in and out, fading in and out.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, thank you for doing the show, even though you're a little under the weather, but
Oh, no problem.
it's an important topic and we appreciate that. And you know, I don't want to get any gender fights started here, but you know what? Welcome to the world of women. You are
Okay.
a single mom, you have kids, right?
Yep.
You get whatever they get, and here you are working,
Yeah,
right?
you kind of have to, you know? I think most people just power through, especially moms.
Yeah, and it's true of single dads too. They have the same issue, right? If you only have one person in the household who can manage the kids, you're going to be working through your sicknesses. But, you know, it really isn't always possible. And I want to talk to women today and the men who care about the women today. And just so that I don't alienate anybody, let me just tell you that I think of this not so much in terms of men and women. And a good analogy would be that, you know, I'm a ballroom dancer. And when we instruct, the old world was, you said, women on one side, men on the other. Now they say leaders on one side, followers on the other. I don't care how we label it. I'm going to call this the X chromosome of money. Okay.
Okay.
I don't care what gender you are, but if you think like the things I'm going to talk about, which is basically how most women think, then you might be falling behind in your retirement plan. You're probably starting on what we say the back foot, right?
Okay.
There are reasons for it, and it isn't about the way you think. It's about the way society has prepared us for this, and the fact that we are still behind the eight ball when it comes to earning.
Is this a
So
specific generation you're talking about, or any generation?
it's everybody still.
Okay.
It's worse for older women. Older women are twice as likely to report that they are very unprepared for retirement than men are. Twice
Okay.
as likely. Okay. So we'll go into a little bit of history of it, but let me just first say that we cannot have this discussion without, and believe me, I'm not trying to alienate men here. You know, we work with men all day, every day too. But I think somebody has to hold up the mirror here and say, okay, you know, we still are dealing with this problem. And I'm not making that up. The statistics support it. For instance, women make 84 cents on the dollar compared to men for the same work
Yeah.
in 2024.
I
Okay.
totally believe that. I believe it's happened to me like every single place I've worked.
And we're now in 2025.
Yeah.
It's that gender wage gap broadens when we talk about people of color. Latina, 52 cents on the dollar if you're a
Wow.
woman versus a man. 52 cents.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And for black women, they are earning 66 cents on a dollar. So, you know what, ladies? We got to fix this. Okay? This cannot continue to happen, and it can't continue to happen because it affects your retirement. And that's why I was saying, you know, older women are twice as likely to say they're very unprepared for retirement compared to men. Now, let's look at why this happens a little bit, because I'm certainly not blaming anybody specifically. I'm not, you know, if you're in a relationship, don't go to your partner and say, "Hey, honey, I'm tired of you out earning me. We
I
need
mean,
to
I've got a whole list of people I want to blame, but I'm going to let you go.
Yeah. No, so you know, we have to look at the sociology and the societal aspects of this. Women in general, not all women, of course, but women, that's my last disclaimer. Okay, I'm tired of apologizing for I'm not bashing on men. Please understand this show is about what is happening to women when it comes to managing money and their retirement in the future. So, or people who are X chromosome minded, okay? If you are X chromosome minded, you are more likely to disproportionately bear the burden or the responsibility, let's call it, of raising children and caring for elderly parents. That brackets you on both ends of the spectrum in ways that decrease your income. Now, in such broad ways that most people don't think about, let's take the childbearing for a minute. Okay, so you're not only bearing the children, but you're rearing the children for the first several years at least, probably, right? And so that reduces your overall income. Not your household income, maybe. Maybe the other person makes up for the difference, but it reduces what you have reported to the government for income, which in return reduces your Social Security check when you retire. Yet, I don't see many people talking about that. I mean, do you? Do you read articles about that?
No, and I also do think that you can go into it thinking you're going to be all set because you're married and you know you've got your husband's income. But what happens if something terrible happens? If you go through a divorce, someone dies, it's a whole new thing.
Yeah, it is. And that's another point here. The way people used to look at this was, well, let's back up far beyond, you know, your and my generation, but where people worked, one of the people worked in the marriage and the other person didn't work outside of the home. They stayed home. And everything was designed to be purchased on one person's income.
And you could do it then.
And it was. That's right. And it was. And then, you know, let's say World War II. Let's blame World War II for this, okay? Women took the jobs that men had to take previously because the war was on. And when the men came home, a lot of people said, I'm going to keep working. I like this. I'm going to keep doing it. That brought two incomes. I'm really oversimplifying history here, but that brought two incomes into the household. That meant that people who were giving you loans for things like mortgages and cars and other things, that the expenses could go up because the a household income could support it, right? So now we're trapped. Now we have two income households, and now we need both incomes to make ends meet. Right. Enter children into the picture. Now what's going to happen? You can't just have kids and just leave them home alone. They're 6 weeks old, but they'll be fine. I'm going to work, right?
Yeah, there's laws against that.
Yes, thankfully, somebody has to take care of them. And if you're going to hire daycare, we all know that's a fortune.
So expensive. Yeah.
Why? Because those people providing daycare have to make a living too, and they have the same kinds of expenses that we have. So it has gotten to be a very expensive, very difficult world to live in financially. You might be thinking, hey, I'm in this great relationship, this great marriage, and we're funneling all this money into my husband's 401k, which is the point you just brought up.
Yeah.
We're funneling this money into his 401k so that when we retire, you know, this money will be there. Now, men and women typically think about their money a little differently. And one of the things that is kind of great about the way men think about it, but which is not always tolerable for women, is that they are bigger risk takers. And so they actually enjoy the process of watching the market, taking some risk, seeing the gains. You know, they don't love the losses, but they usually just don't open the envelope. Market's been terrible. I don't want to see my 401k, okay? Whereas women tend to think more about security, more about being conservative about the dollars. So when you're operating as a couple, as you're operating as a pair, and you're both talking about the money, this can serve you well, right?
Okay.
It can be a little balance between the two of you. First thing we say, we want you both in the meeting. I want to gauge, you know, how are people thinking? Can I bring them to a middle place that serves them both so that they can get to their goal together and happily, right? And complement one another. But I don't know whether that's a factor of me being a woman advisor or not. There's no scientific way for me to tell in my cross section here. But I will say that, statistically, women fire their male advisors within 1 to 2 years of the death of their spouse. Yet most male advisors, 70% of the male advisors will tell you, although they get fired, they will tell you, I have a great relationship with my women, people in my couple. Now, what's going on there, right?
Yeah.
So here's one of the things that happens. Because men think differently about finance than women, and the men actually in general like to pore over the charts, talk about the stock market, meet with the financial advisor, right? Rub elbows to elbows with them. And it's usually a male financial advisor, not always, obviously, case in point, right? Because of that, oftentimes the women who are busy doing things like managing the household finances, you know, going to work, trying to juggle the kids, the dinners, the sports, all the things that do sort of disproportionately fall in many relationships on the woman.
Yeah.
They feel like, okay, honey, you got that part. I've got this part. And so they nod politely and they ask a question every now and then. And they say things to their husband quietly, like, I don't know about this guy, or, you know, I hope he's doing really well for you. That's great, honey. But they don't really have that same relationship with the advisor that the male has, right? So it's statistically true that women outlive men. Obviously not in every case, right? But women outlive men. And so what happens is the women are largely the ones who will bear the responsibility, and I say that in a nice way, of managing this money in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a second. We are busy turning that over to our counterparts, saying, you guys do it. That's great. I love that you're taking risk. That's outside of my tolerance. So you do it. And I'll deal with whatever's left to me should you predecease me.
That doesn't seem smart.
It doesn't seem equitable, right? And it could be reversed. It could be that the woman predeceases the man and the woman has been managing all the finances and the man has no idea what's going on. And believe me, I see this a lot.
I'm just curious, in your experience, like when you're counseling people, do you find more men are in control, or is it 50-50? Not in control, but have taken the lead in their relationship? Or do you find it's equal?
That's a very interesting question, because what I find, it's, you know, thousands of clients, is that the division is almost predictable. The division within a heterosexual couple, or even a gay couple, right, is that people will divide that line down the middle without ever talking about it, Jess. They don't discuss it. It's like rote routine. And because everything takes so much effort today and both people are working, that division of labor happens. And what happens, in my experience, is that the women typically are the ones to handle the minutia, which is part of the most important part, right? But we call it minutia. You pay the bills. You make sure we have enough money for summer camp. You make sure that I have enough money to get my lunch at work.
You're taking care of the groceries and the appointments and the extra.
So you become what I call the steward of household finances.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband or the other partner often becomes the person who says, I'll handle the investments. I'll work. We'll funnel all the money into my 401k, 457, you know, thrift savings plan, whatever it is. And every now and then we'll look at it together and we'll see, you know, when the quarterly statements come in, how much money we have. However, it is the men largely who make the decisions about three things. How much to save,
mm-hmm.
right? How the money gets invested, and how much money will they need during retirement?
It's almost
it was a great question, really, because it is almost always when I start asking those questions,
mm-hmm.
it's so clear to me. The man will look at the woman when I say, so how much do you spend in, car insurance every year? He'll look at her, you know, I don't know, she's got the numbers. Then I say, how much is in your retirement account? If she says anything first, it's usually, I don't have very much, or I need to talk to you about that. I'm not saving much.
Okay, much more coming up in part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. But of course, I want your phone number.
Thank you. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with part two of Financial Fitness on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm, and we're talking women today.
We are. You know, lucky for us, we are two of them. And so when we talk about women, we know we have a different perspective than men talking about women.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I have seen some financial advisors lately who are starting to get this, or some of them have really gotten it, right? Mm-hmm. There's one gentleman, I won't mention his name, but I'd like to have him on as a guest. And his niche is talking to women about how to prepare for this. And he comes across as very genuine, because he is. He has strong women in his life. His wife is a professional. His mother is a professional. He understands the challenges that they bump up against financially. And he's just found a little niche right there, or a niche, mm-hmm. depending on your pronunciation of it, where he talks to women about just these kinds of things. Like, you know, if you don't do something about this, you're going to not be able to retire well.
Do you think that there's a hesitancy with women because it just is like doom and gloom, almost like a prenup where you're like, oh, well, that means I'm going to get divorced? Like, if they feel like if they talk about retirement and don't leave it to the husband, you're predicting they're going to die or you're going to get divorced.
Well, I'm sure there is some of that. I mean, that's the resistance to people buying life insurance, that we don't want to face our own mortality.
Yeah.
Long-term care is even more difficult because nobody wants to perceive themselves in that situation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, subconsciously, I'm sure, you know, you don't want to do that. And of course, when you start off, it's all about, you know, building the wealth and
yeah.
things seem to be going well. And to stop that midway and say, I want to rethink this, is very difficult. I think in general, women are more conservative, more reserved about bringing these things up. They choose their battles more carefully. They decide what's important to them to argue about and what is not. And so it might be more important to argue that the kid is going to go to a private school than it is to argue about their own retirement.
Yeah.
Things like that. And so I think it creeps into the workplace as well. You know, I pointed out that women are making 84 cents on the dollar, and that gender gap widens, right, for Latinas and Blacks. You know, 84 cents on the dollar for the same job in 2024 statistics. Why is that? If employers have to divulge I mean, let's just suppose, right, that everything's supposed to be a level playing field and employers are supposed to disclose these salaries. Why is it that women are still working next to men doing the same job and sometimes have more qualifications, greater qualifications, and are getting paid less?
Yeah, I think employers have been very discreet about wanting to list how much money something costs because they don't want you to know. I know that that's changing a little bit, and I know there's very many good employers out there, but I'm just going to say in the field of radio, I've worked in radio forever, and the men always make more. Do you pick that battle or not? You're worried you're not going to get the job or be able to keep the job. They'll get somebody else in there who won't complain.
No, that's absolutely right. And I think that's true of everybody. You know, in cases where I have to say to people, whether it's man or woman, have you thought about asking for a raise? You've done everything else you can do to trim your expenses. But, you know, maybe you could increase your income. You could ask for a raise. And it's harder for me to get a woman to consider. I don't tell them you have to go and ask for a raise.
Right.
But it's harder for me to get a woman to consider her self-worth than to have a man consider his self-worth.
I think it's because you always think you could be replaced, and then managers or owners have a tendency to make you feel like the company could go under any minute, so you're lucky you have a job.
Yeah.
So then you don't want to, you know, you don't want to toss that ball up in the air.
Everybody is replaceable. We all would like to think we aren't, but we are.
Right.
I can just give you, again, my cross section is I work with, five different hosts, basically, right, on radio. Three of them are men, and two of them are women, right? So I have a pretty good feel for what it feels like to do a show with a man and what it feels like to do a show with a woman. And you know what I think?
What?
I think there isn't a difference.
Oh, really?
I swear to you.
I think I'm much funnier, Francis. I think I'm much funnier.
I have more time on the air with you, and you are pretty funny, I have to say. But, you know, it isn't about the gender. It's about the person.
Yeah.
I mean, my shows with Kevin are very different than my shows with Nick, and they are in booths side by side.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the same topic, but they have a different audience.
They're different age groups too, though. Kevin's much younger than Nick, or a little bit younger than Nick.
Yeah, that's true.
I wonder if that changes your viewpoint on money too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yes, it does in some ways, that the age has something to do with it. But in terms of the gender and the skill to do the job, they're all great. You know, I would never pit one of you against the other and say this person should be earning less or this person should be earning more.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of the colleges have gone to this blind testing now where you can't ask questions that lead you to understand what ethnicity somebody is, what gender somebody is, whatever you're trying to make your decision on accepting these applicants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult, and there are lots of ways to get around it. And I think that's what employers do or will do with this disclosure of how much the salary should be for a job. You know, I would appeal to the employer's sense of ethics and morals and say, pay women what you would pay men if they're as qualified. If they're not, pay them less because they're not as qualified, no matter what their gender is.
Okay? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Don't see them as though they're not as qualified because of their gender. Okay. I don't want to end, and we're far from that yet, but I don't want to end without giving people some practical tips about what they can do to to fix this imbalance. You know, let's suppose you're a woman listening to this, or someone with that X chromosome money gene that I'm talking about, and you're listening to this and you're saying, yeah, that sounds like us. That sounds like me. What can I do about that? I think the financial advisor we have right now, it seems fine. He's making us money. She's making us money. Okay. You brought up the idea of age, you know, the topic of age. Does age make a difference? Yes, it makes a difference. And it makes it especially in this way, Jess. If you are younger, you can tolerate more risk. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you like it, right? You might be a little uncomfortable with it, but you have time to make up for the losses that inherently come from time to time with taking more risk, mm-hmm. right? That's that trade-off. You hope you make more money and you take the risk of maybe losing some. And so mm-hmm. you're going up, down, up, down, up, down, and you're trying to get to the top, okay? As you get older and you need to know that that money will be there in retirement, you need to worry about two things. The first is, well, three things, okay? How much money it is. Mm-hmm. But that almost doesn't matter when you think in terms of income, and I'll explain that. But how much money it is, how it's going to last you your lifetime, and how it's being managed.
Okay.
Okay. The how it's being managed, and I'll make some enemies here, I'm sure. But don't worry, advisors, you got more young people coming your way. You will love the risk, okay? But as you get older, you might want to take a look at who is managing your money. Most advisors who are managing money for people who are younger and going into retirement transition mm-hmm. are really skillful and really great at growing money. But their mindset is all about growing money. How much money can we amass?
Yeah.
It is not about spending money, which is what will happen to you when you transition into retirement. You will stop earning. You will stop mm-hmm. growing at that rate, right? Hopefully you're still growing money. But you need to rely on that nest egg to be able to exist while you are spending money.
Right. And you don't know how long that's going to be.
You don't know how long that's going to be. And so the shift from advisor to advisor, now some advisors can handle it all, but in my experience, it's not really how it works well. For instance, I'm not an advisor who does a lot of growth stuff, right? Okay. I used to be a registered investment advisor. I used to do that on a daily basis. But what I know about money is it's a very broad topic. And if I'm going to do the kinds of things I do, help people get out of debt, help them with a budget, help them retire successfully, I cannot, and do radio shows and all of that, I cannot have my finger on the pulse of the market in such a way that I'm managing those portfolios every day in the way that I would feel comfortable mm-hmm. with for my clients.
Could yeah, I it's a lot of work.
Cookie cutter system? Sure.
Yeah.
Would I? No. So that's where I leave that to other advisors who do that. But when you start to think about, am I going to be able to retire? You need to think about how are you going to spend that money down or spend that money, not how you're going to spend it down. That points to a number of things that I can go over quickly about things you can change, but it points to every, I almost never qualify anything by saying every or never or not, right? Every person's portfolio maybe should have a portion of that portfolio in something like an annuity. Now, I know some annuities get a bad rap. So do some cars, okay? There's a gazillion annuities. But mm-hmm. the thing about an annuity that might work for you is you might still have some earning potential in the market, but protect your downside from losses. And here's the key. Get a lifetime income you cannot outlive, right? An income you cannot outlive. If you live to be 102, 108, they still have to pay you even if you've run out of money. Now, is it a place for your whole portfolio? No, of course not. No places, right?
Yeah.
But for part of it, that could help you get that security you're looking for. Women, compared to men, as I said, men love to watch the market and talk about the charts and all that. Women are looking for security. They want their goals to be heard, right? They want to be taken seriously, but they want to know that money's going to be there because they suspect that they may outlive the men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. Men have a similar problem, Jess, in that they really should, they tend to, I think, as a group, underestimate their life expectancy. We all see those government charts, you know, you're going to live to be 76 and it's scary, right? And you think, well, my father died at whatever. And so right. I think the men are less concerned about, you know, outliving their money, but they should be more concerned about it because men are living longer and so are women, right? We're living longer. We're taking better care of ourselves. So I think all of those things are true. You know, I'd love to have another hour to talk about this, and I'm sure we will continue this in another show, but just so that I give you some things that you can do, some action points you can do right now to start to change this balance.
Okay.
First thing women are going to be right on, cut the expenses, right? Trim your budget as best you can. Pay off your debt early. This stuff is going to take talking to your partner. You're going to have to say, hey, I think I'm behind the eight ball here. I don't have as much in retirement as you have. And it's a lot. Women have way less than 50% of what men have in general in their retirement dollars at different ages, and not time to go into the stats. But take advantage of your 401k catch up. In 2025, you're going to be able to put in about $31,000 into your 401k, and the employer-employee match has gone up to $70,000. So that's if you're over 50 years old. If you're over 60, from 60 to 63, because of the Secure 2.0, you can add an extra $11,250 instead of $7,500. So you can put some money away there with a cap between you and your employer of $70,000. So you might not be able to afford it, but you should know you can do that if you can find the room in your budget to do it. If you're over 59 and a half, consider moving some of this money now using your in-service transfer into something like that special kind of an annuity so that it has time to mature. And when you're ready for it, bam, the income's there. Okay. You can usually do that within a year, but you might want to consider something like that at this stage. There's a couple of quick things I want to just say. Check your beneficiaries on these contracts. You need to remember that things like annuities precede your will. So check them, because you don't want your ex-spouse, you know, getting that money if something happens to you and your wife or husband is sitting there saying, why don't I have this? Especially in divorce and situations like that, review your deeds, make sure they're held properly, joint tenants, not tenants in common, things like that. Check with your attorney. And overall, just use the financial and legal tools that are available to you to be able to get a handle on this. And for women, you know, ladies, don't do it anymore. Don't just say, hey, the money's in my husband's 401k. It's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's get your phone number if anybody's got questions on this. I'm sure that they will.
Yeah, I hope so. I'd love to talk to people about this. My number is 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess, for doing it under the weather.
Of course. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.